This is the Eye on Potatoes, brought to you by the National Potato Council. The Eye is the place to tune in for conversations with growers and thought leaders on advocacy, production, and all things potatoes. Now, here's your host, Lane Nordland.
Hello, friends, and welcome back to more conversations here on the Eye on Potatoes podcast. I'm Lane Nordland, and today we're here to talk about the 2025 dietary guidelines for Americans and how the U.S. potato industry is working to ensure that the positive facts, the real facts about potato nutrition, are heard by those creating the guidelines. Of course, our show is brought to you by our friends at Syngenta, and they continue to support this podcast each and every episode. For more on what they do to support growers out in the countryside, visit Syngenta online. Well, as we focus on the 2025 dietary guidelines, we're joined today by MPC CEO Cam Quarles and Beth Johnson with Food Directions. So I want to thank you both for joining us here today. We're kind of spread across the country. I'm on the West Coast. You guys are on the East Coast. But Beth, thanks for joining us. How are things in your neck of the woods here today?
Well, thank you, Lane, and thank you, Cam. It's a delight to be here today. Talking about being on both coasts, I think that kind of defines a lot of what happens with the dietary guidelines. We often hear from folks that, particularly from the nutrition, the professors and academic world on both coasts, but not in the middle. So I think it's a perfect way to kind of start off this podcast. So the dietary guidelines they're really meant for all of Americans to understand how to eat a healthy diet per se. And so not to have too much sodium, not to have too much added sugar, eat enough fruits and vegetables and things like that. But where they really come into play is in policy. And that can be policy for the government, like school meals and how much of a certain how many grains should be served, how many vegetables should be served, what types of vegetables should be served in school breakfast and school lunch, WIC, things like that. The laws that actually regulate or that are oversee or the National School Lunch Program and the National School Breakfast Program actually require those to follow the dietary guidelines. So it is key there, but it's also not just government policies. It could be, for instance, a lot, and I'll talk, I can talk in a bit about a lot of retailers right now have produce prescription programs, or they have incentive programs to purchase more fruits and vegetables. Depending on what the dietary guidelines say about potatoes and other starchy vegetables, that could impact how those programs treat potatoes and other starchy vegetables. So it's not just the federal government, it's also what's going on across the U.S. As we try to promote certain types of eating behaviors.
Well, it's definitely very important, but very complex along the way. And, you know, Cam, there's also a lot going on out in D.C. at this time. Obviously, our lawmakers are coming back after that August recess. And this year, it just seemed that August recess was really long. Yeah, I don't know why it felt longer. You're out in the Beltway, but for us out in the West, it just felt it was longer than usual. I think it's the same number of days in August on the calendar as usual. But, you know, we have budget issues. We have farm bill negotiations. But how is it now that September has rolled around?
Well, I'm glad it felt like a long time for you, Lane. It felt like maybe a long weekend for us because there's so many issues that are hanging out there. By the way, I would like to point out with Beth, this is why we've hired Beth and her great team. Is you ask her how she's doing, and she's like, "I'm doing great. And here's all the reasons that the dietary guidelines are really, really important for this industry. And I'm going to get my, I want to make my points to you while I've got you." And I'm like, that is the type of ferocity that we need for our, for the folks who are advocating for the industry. Yeah, you're right. On, we've got, in terms of our annual and, well, our five-year policy issues, you know, we've got this collision between appropriations and the farm bill here. They're both going to expire at the end of this month. And I'm not sure anybody has an idea when the solutions are going to be delivered on either one of those. It's getting probably increasingly likely we're going to have a government shutdown at least of some length of time here when we get to October 1st, the new fiscal year. And that's going to be coupled with very likely at least a short-term expiration of the farm bill. So yeah, there's a lot to deal with. And then Beth kicked it off talking about dietary guidelines. That's why we're here today. That is much like the farm bill. This is a set of policies, a set of recommendations by the federal government, which is going to impact not just how we operate through 2024. It's really going to impact us how we operate through the balance of this decade and into the next one. So that's why we take it so seriously. And we have smart people like Beth to help us on it.
Well, and I wanted to point out, though, that Beth has over 25 years of food policy expertise. And Beth, do you just want to quickly share just that plethora of knowledge that you have, just the different roles that you've played, and also the role you've also played in the past in helping craft those dietary guidelines on that federal level as well?
Absolutely. Would love to. When I started with the in food policy, it was actually now I must say it's about 30 years. So the years are going quickly. But food policy was not a front and center issue, certainly not for the White House. It was when I started, it was kind of the first presentation of the food guide pyramid. So there was a lot of focus on that, particularly for certain commodity groups. But it wasn't a household thought that very many people had. And so I've watched it over the last 25, 30 years really become front and center. And, it's being looked at in so many different ways. And from over the years, in my experience, I did spend some time on Capitol Hill with the Senate Agriculture Committee, working on a farm bill, working on a child nutrition reauthorization. I will say at that point, food policy was largely focused on food stamps, now called SNAP, and school meals and WIC. It wasn't a lot of, over the years, then we had front of pack labeling and some of these other things, but it just didn't have the interest. You had a few people that were very interested in watching things like the dietary guidelines, a lot of commodity groups, but you didn't have, 250 people wanting to give presentations at a dietary guidelines meeting, 500 people wanting to give presentations. And so I've really seen over the years, both with interest on Capitol Hill, and then I spent about 7 years at USDA in working with the Secretary of Agriculture there's just this growing interest in how we can help people eat better, how we can deal with growing numbers and rates of obesity as well as diet-related disease and things like that. And a lot more is being put, frankly, on the industry. And so industry's responsibility to change what's out there, what's grown, what's subsidized, anything, soup to nuts. I did in 2005 guidelines. I was at USDA and very involved in getting that document together. Did see how different, different individuals that may have served on the advisory committee or others had their bent. And it was really important for us to hear from all stakeholders and make sure that information was reviewed from a broad set of stakeholders and not just get folks on the advisory committee or hear from folks that had a particular bent and ignore what others might have to say. As I mentioned in the when I first spoke, is listening to folks from across the United States and experts from across the United States is critical, not just to hear what certain academic institutions have to say and what they believe. And so I think, that was one of the things when I was there that we worked very, very hard to make sure that it truly reflected the science, didn't go beyond what the science said, and that we heard from a lot of folks. So it's been an exciting journey across my now 30 years plus, and I still love it. And I still think that there is just an amazing amount to do from folks like National Potato Council.
Well, we appreciate you joining us here today, and also you and your team's work in helping tell the story and sharing the real scientific evidence and the argument for potatoes in the dietary guidelines discussions that are coming up. And you did such a great job of explaining those guidelines when we start our conversation here today. But it is two sides of a story. These guidelines are important to consumers. And they're so important to producers. Can you maybe walk us through how you explain that to lawmakers or decision makers at these agencies, and why it's important to have that input from producers and groups like the National Potato Council?
Absolutely. The consumers in large part typically are interested in eating healthier. They have a lot on their plates. They have a lot going on. And so what they choose in any given day or any given meal may not be what dietitians or certain folks feel are the healthiest that they could choose. But generally speaking, people want to eat healthier. And so understanding what is part of a healthy diet, not just what foods are healthy or not healthy. To really look at how people can live their lives as they live today and not have to stop everything that they're doing. Understanding that fries are very much part of a healthy diet. Is it good to look for opportunities to maybe bake them or air fry them or something like that? Might be one way to look at it, but frying them is not bad either. They are still incredibly important vegetables that people enjoy. Potatoes are America's favorite vegetable. And so understanding and really looking at the research and providing that is key. If the potato industry doesn't provide that data, there isn't anybody else out there who is looking at what potatoes can provide to the diet. There are groups looking out in, now at this point, ultra processed foods or, other aspects, but it's the potato industry that's going to be looking at how potatoes fit into a healthy diet. And that needs to be looked at as we make these decisions, because they are incredibly important. And it is, consumers deserve to know how they can eat a healthy diet, but not necessarily be perfect in the eyes of, let's say, Harvard or Tufts or somebody like that.
So some of our listeners may be wondering, these dietary guidelines, who exactly do they guide? Maybe is a question people may be asking. How is this going to impact the flow of potato products into different markets, or who's going to be eating them? Could you maybe shed light on how the guidelines really dictate certain programs?
Definitely, they absolutely dictate what is served for a lot of the federal feeding programs for school breakfast, school lunch. The Women, Infants, and Children program have to follow it, and so then there are other feeding programs that are maybe a bit smaller than those, but those are required. Certainly, school meals programs are required to follow the dietary guidelines, and so depending on how how starchy vegetables or vegetables overall are recommended, when they're setting any kind of regulatory framework, they have to follow the dietary guidelines. But more and more, as programs like Food is Medicine are becoming more popular, within a variety of spaces, we're looking at opportunities to promote produce. For instance, we know that people don't eat enough fruits and vegetables, so there are lots of these. Some are under Food is Medicine, some are under other things, but promoting the purchase of sometimes just fresh, but fruits and vegetables generally. If, for instance, potatoes and other starchy vegetables are one of the questions that's being asked right now, a scientific question, which I use air quotes around, is whether or not vegetables and grains can be swapped, starchy vegetables and grains should be interchangeable. That kind of decision or discussion of any sort can impact the decisions that are made through these produce prescription programs. And so if all of a sudden it's, well, starchy vegetables are interchangeable with a grain, maybe that's not one we want to promote. We want to promote others. And so, or we don't want to promote frozen. We only want to promote fresh. Things like that are all critical across the board into, you know, what the policies come out and then how people view. It's also part of the government speech. And, you know, there's education programs that come out of the government. There is the what they call My Plate, educational messages, and the dietary guidelines are impacting that. And finally, then they impact what the Food and Drug Administration labels potentially as healthy. And obviously, the other would be not healthy. They follow the dietary guidelines to determine what that definition should be. And so what the dietary guidelines says about products like potatoes and where they classify them or misclassify them can impact all of those different kinds of programs.
So why do we do this process every few years? It seems that a lot of work goes into this, a lot of education, but I do understand new research can come out and that would be beneficial for food products like potatoes. But how has that process really been put into place over the last few cycles of creating the guidelines to where we are now and working with the advisory committee to make the right choice?
Well, it's a fairly controversial question that you ask. There are many that believe that every 5 years is too often to see any significant change in research outcomes. The law that set up the establishment of the dietary guidelines it was actually written after the first dietary guidelines came out, but it says in there that the Secretary of Agriculture and Secretary of Health and Human Services should work together to pull together experts to review the dietary guidelines every 5 years. Now, some will argue that that law has sunsetted. And so it is no longer a legal requirement to do it every 5 years. But because that's the way it's been done for so long, I don't think anybody has actively stepped in. There's certainly been lots of discussion, but nobody has actively tried to do anything either from a legal or a regulatory perspective to change that. So that's why it's every 5 years. It is hard to see big changes. That's why we don't see usually huge changes every, you know, when the dietary guidelines are updated. But one of the ways that the government is trying to address that now is to ask these very specific scientific questions. So maybe 5 years ago, they asked questions about sodium. They're not asking questions about that this time. What they're doing is now asking questions on ultra processed foods or other things. So that's the approach that the government is trying to take with you know, looking at new issues as opposed to new science, maybe.
Well, Beth, thank you for quickly covering that for us, because again, it is complex. And of course, right now they are in the gathering phase of comments, and the National Potato Council and your team have been hard at work creating testimony and sharing those facts. And Cam, you're going to be submitting comments here very soon to the Dietary Guidelines Advisory Committee. Can you tell us some of those key points that you made in those comments that you're submitting? And also, some may think it's a little humorous, but the need to explain to them that potatoes are, in fact, a vegetable.
Yeah, that Lane, it causes my eyes to roll and a little chuckle every time I have to address that. But one thing before we get to that, I want to go back to one thing that I thought was really important that Beth was talking about earlier, was our as an industry, you know, not just Beth's team, but the National Potato Council, APRI, all of the various resources that we have to deliver credible research in terms of the nature of potatoes and how they fit in a healthy diet. You know, we and this just happened a couple of weeks ago. We had And every dietary guidelines process, we have these inquiries come in from outside groups, reporters, and those kind of things, saying, why is the potato industry involved in the dietary guidelines? Shouldn't you just let this process play out with the voices of the activists and some academics who come in with their own personal bents and just stay out of it? And when they say, don't you know that's how it should work, I have to tell them I don't know how that it should work, and I'm not going to know that that's how it should work, because that makes absolutely zero sense. There are no better resources out there in terms of evaluating science related to potatoes than the folks who deal with them on a regular basis. We demand, and as a stakeholder, as an industry, we demand an equal seat at the table with all of the other activist groups who some of them are well-intended, some of them are ill-intended. And we are committed to being a valuable and credible, I mean, I think that's really important too, part of this process. It can't work any other way. So we don't shy away from any of that. And that's why we have great people like Beth helping us out. It's just essential in terms of our meeting our overall mandate to represent this great industry. To answer directly the question that you asked, one of the first considerations out of this new panel, out of this new dietary guidelines process, came from the scientific review panel, and they are asking the question, should potatoes remain classified as a vegetable? That question is, it's largely born out of, it has nothing to do with the nature of a potato in terms of its botanical characteristics, the how it's produced, all of those kinds of things. That question is completely divorced from anything around the physical characteristics of a potato. Where it comes from, and I think Beth will echo this, is what folks substitute potatoes for on the plate. And oftentimes people are going to have a potato or, and that or typically ends up being something in the grains category, rice, those kinds of things. When you think about, though, the gravity of that reclassification, Lane, potatoes are the most widely produced vegetable in the United States. We as an industry are a proud member of the U.S. specialty crop community. So there are literally hundreds of millions of dollars that potatoes have the ability to access in the Farm Bill and other programs due specifically to our existence as a vegetable. We've built a lot of those programs. Consumers rely on knowing that potatoes are a vegetable. They create meals associated with that. There's permutations throughout federal policies, down at the state level, all those kinds of things. If you suddenly reclassify potatoes as a grain, there's a domino effect across all of those things that I just mentioned. It will cause chaos for consumers. It will be a massive sucking sound in terms of agricultural research that potatoes are no longer qualified for, a variety of different avenues to promote potatoes, both domestically, potentially internationally. It's a real, I'm certain that the folks who asked that question didn't realize the permutations of all that. I've raised it specifically to the Secretary of Agriculture. I think, you know, Secretary Vilsack is a very smart individual and he's a smart policymaker. He understands all of that cascading negative impact. But it is something we take incredibly seriously. There are nuances to what the, as Beth was saying, these are kind of incremental changes that often evolve are the result of every iteration of the DGA process. We can deal with some of those nuances, but if they get this one wrong and it's kind of a binary consideration, it's either going to be a vegetable or it's not. If they get this wrong, the impact is huge and instantaneous, and we just they can't land in that space. I'd also like to offer, Lane, apparently since it involves substitution, if a potato was substituted for, I don't know, ice cream or something, I guess we could be considered to be in the dairy program. When you think of sort of the comic absurdity of what's being suggested here, it just makes your head spin. So anyway, you can probably tell from my my rather acerbic way of framing this that I'm not in love with having to deal with this question. I just think it's preposterous, but sadly we have to take it seriously, and we've got to push back on it.
So who or what groups are really making that push on the substitution argument that that classification should be changed?
Great question. It is largely the individuals in the, I will say, public health community. Harvard is one in particular. Tufts has done some work, but they talk about the starch component within starchy vegetables and align that to the quote unquote starch component or carbohydrate component in grains. And so that's kind of where it started. And then it has, if I'd say snowballed, but it has grown, expanded that concept within in a certain sector of the nutrition community. I talked about, you know, kind of the coasts. And, you know, if you think about it, if you think about how the coasts eat today, you know, what they would love is for Middle America not to, you know, to move away from their, you know, I'll say meat and potatoes, but, you know, that kind of more traditional meal. And, you know, it's just, it's wrought with, I would say, inaccuracies. I'll give a story. When I was at the Cattlemen's Association many, many years ago, and the desire was that milk and meat could both be in the protein category and could be served interchangeably. And working with our dairy friends and working with folks in the milk industry, we said they're not the same nutrients. They don't offer the same thing. They're both important. They don't provide the same nutritional profile. And that's the way it is here. Is, I mean, are you really going to say that a potato is a refined grain? No, it's not. It's not a grain. And so how it's eaten and looking at how it's eaten and maybe substituted is a very short-term view, because how we eat today is not necessarily the way we ate, you know, 25 years ago, or how we're going to be eating 25 years from now. So that kind of analysis, in my view, is not science-based. It is based on, you know, a perception of how, you know, and there is data to show that certainly people do, they may substitute potatoes for rice or pasta or something like that. But again, that's today. That could easily change. And frankly, how many times I've gone to restaurants where potatoes are part of a pasta dish because they are a vegetable with other vegetables with the pasta. And so, you know, I think it is just incredibly important that we enforce that this is a science-based process, a science-based review process. And it is not at the whim of somebody's idea of what is the right thing to do or the way that people eat today.
Well, Beth, thank you for explaining more on that aspect of this process. And Cam, just circling back to your comments to the advisory committee, consumption of vegetables, in particular potatoes, is also important and a part of your talking points. Could you maybe expand upon that?
Yeah, and I think one of the greatest examples of that, Lane, is really what we saw with the school breakfast program. If you roll things back about a decade ago, there were, in our opinion, some misguided efforts to effectively pull potatoes out of a lot of the school feeding programs. There's still existing regulations at USDA that they're in the process of. I think their intention is to change them, but they technically exist on the books today, which basically say potatoes can be served after every other kind of vegetable. And just think about that for school children. If you're not including at breakfast, if you're not including some variant of potatoes, what other vegetables do you serve to kids at breakfast time that they're actually going to eat? And we've looked at a lot of the data and a lot of the menu combinations, and potatoes are incredibly helpful, not just selfishly for our own commodity, which we unabashedly say is the best one to put on breakfast plates, but also if you combine other vegetables into kind of like a scramble or a mash with potatoes. It really encourages kids to eat all of those things, and so you reduce plate waste. They like the meal, which is the primary consideration. If they don't like what's put in front of them, it's certainly going to waste, and they're not going to get the nutrients. So, in a we have cautioned the DGAs to consider the obviously we have a host of really valuable scientific resources which go through all of the various nutrients of concern that potatoes can play a very positive role in filling those holes in. But then also the practical implications of we have a country that eats fewer vegetables than we should per capita, and encouraging potatoes, making them more of a part of the diet, is going to be an incredible positive rather than trying to force feed kids commodities that they just flat out won't eat, especially at breakfast. But shoot, a lot of the times it's a real challenge. I know when I was a kid, it was a challenge to get me to eat various things, and my dad and I had staring contests over many hours to over that very subject when I was a kid.
It's also cost effective. These school food service operators are very challenged, especially with today's supply chain issues, to manage their menus in a cost effective manner. And potatoes are a great way to do that and still provide the nutrition that kids love.
Very, very important point there, and thanks for bringing that up, Beth. And a very complex issue, and we're going to talk more about how Food Directions is supporting MPC all the way through this process. But we do need to take a quick commercial break and hear from our friends at Syngenta. We'll be back with the Eye on Potatoes podcast right after these words.
Syngenta cares about potato producer productivity and offers a wide variety of seed treatment options, protecting your investment from the beginning. Syngenta's all-liquid seed treatment Cruiser Max Vibrance potato offers protection from harmful insect pests, including Colorado potato beetle, green peach aphid, and leafhoppers. Additionally, Cruiser Max Vibrance potato delivers immediate protection against fungal diseases. Contact your local retailer for information on Cruiser Max Vibrance potato, Cruiser Max Potato Extreme, or Maxim MZ to find out what best fits your farm needs.
As we come back to the Eye on Potatoes podcast, we are discussing the 2025 Dietary Guidelines for Americans. And we're joined today by the National Potato Council CEO, Cam Quarles, and Beth Johnson with Food Directions. And Beth just pointed out just the cost-effective nature that potatoes can be for school systems, and making sure that kids are able to get healthy meals at school. And it's all about telling that story and sharing that real scientific evidence of the role potatoes play as a vegetable. So Beth, when we look at the relationship with Food Directions and National Potato Council, how is Food Directions supporting the industry during this process? What does that approach look like with you and your team and going out and working to educate everybody that's involved with this process?
Well, thanks, Lane. It is a in some ways a daunting and in some ways a very enjoyable process, in the sense that from the enjoyable part, nothing better than potatoes, right? So it is a it's a great message to get out there, and there is great science that folks like APRI and others have done to be able to share. I think one of the specific ways that Food Directions works is to really you know, listen carefully to what's being said in the committee meetings, which anybody can do, but also going back and looking what some of these folks have said, you know, outside of the committee meetings. What are they saying now? Attending public meetings, like the recent American Society of Nutrition had a meeting where one of the committee members was there and was you know, not giving a presentation, but asking questions, frankly, not about potatoes, but about other things. And so you can really get a sense of, you know, what direction certain folks are coming to, coming at this from, I should say, knowing the research, knowing what's out there, knowing the opposition, knowing the groups who are speaking on this, who's understanding who's more, who might have somebody's ear with either a committee member or with one of the USDA or Department of Health and Human Services, talking and getting, making sure that every opportunities that Potato Council has to provide comments, to go in and meet with folks, we do that. But then the other part that we really, it's important to us, I guess I would say, is to really look at where the blind spots may be. And so what are some of the ways that the Dietary Guidelines Committee could lean in on? Maybe they don't say, you know, maybe they hedge on the potatoes as a vegetable, but they say starchy vegetables should be decreased in consumption. We try to think of all those different ways that could, based on the conversations, based on what we're seeing out there, ways in which could be problematic for the industry. And so working with others to identify others in the industry, to identify research that we think may offset that chance, even if it's not being discussed in the committee, even if nobody's brought it up, we look for those types of issues that could be problematic for us in school meals, could be problematic in, like I talked about, incentive programs, or could be problematic just in educating the, you know, the consumer. Certainly we look at to get positive messages out there. And I'm not saying we only look for the traps, but if you don't look for the traps, you could get caught flat-footed. And that's, you know, having watched this process for many, many years, we've seen other groups get caught flat-footed by only trying to get a positive message in there. And then, oh, by the way, in the 11th hour, they realize that something is pretty negative in the scientific report. And then also when the scientific report then goes from the committee, goes to the secretaries of Health and Human Service and Department of Agriculture, you know, at that point, that's really where CAM can go in and you know, comment on what might be right, what might be inaccurate from our perspective on the report, may not have taken into consideration certain things, the unintended consequences of certain things, like he talked about. And that's where we really hit hard. I think at this stage of the game, we're working with APRI and others to make sure that we've got the research and the education. We're working with other partners to ensure they're providing the information, and we are looking for those blind spots, as well as potential opportunities. But later, when the scientific report goes to the secretaries, it becomes more directly on CAM's plate, and we work with him to go through the report. You know, not just those things that stand out or make the media, but those things that maybe don't, but could be problematic to us. So really, really hone in on that.
So, Beth, what are the consequences if the advisory committee gets it wrong?
As Cam pointed out, from the various aspects of the potato industry, working with different programs, particularly at USDA, where potatoes are a vegetable, if that is taken away, that's got much, much, much wider consequences than just nutrition. That goes into research dollars, that goes into safety, just any number of issues. That's incredibly harmful, I would say, to the industry, and very short-sighted on behalf of the government if they would go in that direction. From a nutrition standpoint, there are a few things. I think that number one, we would certainly argue it's not based on science. What we could see is even short of them saying potatoes are no longer a vegetable, they could certainly potentially look at something like saying, well, they're interchangeable. You know, they can either be in the grain category or they could be in the vegetable category. Something like that then allows school food programs to say you can either serve, a cup of starchy vegetables or 2 ounces of grain. All of a sudden now you're missing out on all of those nutrients, that the fiber, the vitamin C, the potassium, those nutrients that are so critical that potatoes provide, you're missing out on that because you're now, you don't have to serve the vegetables. So that's one. Certainly we could see other consequences, like I said, in, they could lean in on certain forms are less, should be decreased in serving, even though, we know, I talked about earlier, fries are certainly, provide the same nutrients as a potato, and as a white potato, I should say, served like a baked potato, but just in a different form. And they could say, okay, well, we don't want to see any more fries on the menu, or, something like that. Children need to decrease their intake of fries. That would be very detrimental to the industry. That would be detrimental to kids, who that's how they're getting these nutrients. And so those are some of the consequences. There are others as well in some of the programs I talked about before. But I think really, and again, some of that may not get into the policy document. It could be in the scientific report, which comes first and then is delivered to the secretaries. Even if it's in that report, it's problematic for us. And so we're working really hard to keep it out of that. And then there are other links in the sense that in the past two dietary guidelines, there hasn't been a lot of research, but they've leaned into the question of whether potatoes are linked to colorectal cancer. And that is something we are doing good research to show that there isn't. We really need to get that out. We don't need that going into a third scientific report. So those are the types of things that we've got good research and we need to push hard to make sure that the experts understand the facts.
And Cam, it does really seem that everybody that's involved in the potato industry does have a role to really play in promoting all the nutritional benefits of potatoes.
Yeah, absolutely. Lane, I think we have an incredibly good story to tell. These are, as you saw from back at the Washington Summit in February, when we came out with that really striking economic analysis of what the potato industry means overall to the U.S. economy. And it's really, it starts at family farms, goes all the way up through the supply chain, goes into a lot of the schools, the institutions that are so fundamental in delivering these nutrition programs to school kids, to seniors. I think we have a fantastic story to tell there. Every facet of the industry needs to be sensitive to how impactful policies like the dietary guidelines can be, either positively or negatively. If we get this right, it's a great tailwind for the next 5 years, Beth. So we really do want to capitalize on that opportunity. We just have to be sensitive to there's a lot of players there. Again, a lot of them are well-intended, some of them are ill-intended. Some of them have their minds made up and have had it made up for decades. And we need to recognize the challenge of that and push back in a credible, meaningful way. I think that starts with our great producers, but then really echoes throughout all of the resources. It's Beth Shop, it's Potatoes USA, APRI. They're all involved in some form in analyzing data around potatoes and delivering that data in a consumable way by the folks who are going to make these decisions. It really is a team effort ultimately, Lane.
Well, again, a lot of great teammates on the team to help share this the real scientific information during this process. And Beth or Cam, I know we all have busy days ahead of us here today, but a busy day ahead of us here today. But any last comments you would just like to share with our listeners on the Iowa Potatoes podcast today?
I think that the only thing I would add to what Cam just said is any chance that any of the listeners have to talk about the benefits of potato and potatoes being a vegetable and reminding people is not a wasted effort, because we never know where those messages are going to be heard. And the folks on the Dietary Guidelines Committee, just looking at that, they hear from all kinds of people. And so, if you're talking to your university, or you have a chance to do that, or you have a chance to communicate with somebody, you never know how that may get back to somebody on the committee. And those are incredible ways to have our messages get heard. And so I think, I think that is absolutely essential, that we kind of pound that or beat that drum, I guess I would say, you can't say it enough. It seems ridiculous. Why wouldn't you think potato is a vegetable? But I just think you can't beat the drum enough.
Yeah. And I just like to say, I totally agree with that. And I'd like to reinforce, we're really proud to have Beth and her terrific team. It's not, Beth is the leader of Food Directions, but she's got great folks working for her. The Allies, Maggie, a lot of folks have seen them at our meetings. Really tremendous resources that she's got on her team. I use the military term, they are a force multiplier when we have to engage in these really important processes like the dietary guidelines. Just extremely happy to have all of the talent that Beth has amassed supporting the potato industry. It's a reflection of how seriously we take this whole effort.
I thank you, Cam, for that. And I will say that from our perspective, and I speak for my staff who are amazing, we love potatoes. I mean, this is also a passion for us. So we're all dietitians, believe it or not, and we all believe in this. So we're there for you guys.
Well, I appreciate you both joining us here today and really sharing your insight, your knowledge, and all the efforts going forward to make sure that U.S. potato industries and the nutritional facts are heard during the 2025 Dietary Guidelines for Americans. Again, friends, thanks for joining us here on the Eye on Potatoes podcast, and thank you to Syngenta for helping us bring you this message. Beth and Cam, thank you so much for joining us here today.
Thank you.
Thanks, Lane. Good to see you.
Nice to see you both, too. With that, friends, that will do it for today's conversation here on the Eye on Potatoes podcast. I'm Lane Northlund. We'll catch you next time.
Thanks for tuning in to the National Potato Council's Eye on Potatoes podcast with host Lane Northlund. For more information, visit nationalpotatocouncil.org and make sure to subscribe to the podcast today.